there's a little, the things on the bottom right that are like share screen, raise hand, react.
Oh, yeah.
There, I clicked on raise hand and then you joined at the exact same time. I was like, oh, what? What just happened?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm also doing all right. Yeah, I haven't. Have you done anything interesting today?
Should we intro and then do this?
Oh yeah, sorry.
Okay. All right.
3, 2, 1, go. Hi, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Jay.
And welcome to Highbrow Theater,
a podcast where we analyze plays.
So you don't have to.
Like, why don't we have just a single recording of that so we can just insert it every time? That
well, seems I feel like it kind of gets me into, like, the headspace of doing the episode. I'm like, oh, wait, I'm a podcast host. You know, it's just like a
yeah. And it's unique for every episode.
Yeah. I try to change up my intonation, you know, like a real actor.
Today I went to the store because we're about to get a nice storm, so I was getting some essentials, which included the Chromatica Oreos.
Okay, so what flavor are they?
They're just vanilla. They're just colored with weird chemicals.
I thought that they were going to be, like, strawberry kiwi.
Ooh, that'd be weird, but I'd definitely try it.
Oh, my God. Well, how do you feel about them? Are they everything you wish?
I think I don't like golden Oreos normally, but, like, I think the branding is getting me.
Well, I would agree, yeah.
Because they're like, they're symbols on the cookies. Like, they're not all the same. And I'm just like, you know what? Support the artist, if that means supporting capitalism.
Support a very large corporation that manufactures food that's horrible for you. But it's all in the name of Gaga.
I know.
No, I support it. I think it's such a weird marketing thing, but I'm glad that she did it. Because who else would have? Who else would have taken the risk?
And the thing is, like, the packaging is, like, a very, very shiny pink, so it catches your attention, too.
Maybe Oreos reached out, and they were like, hey, we're not selling cookies. Lady Gaga, help us.
Yeah.
It has to be you, Lady Gaga. Absolutely not related to Lady Gaga at all. We're talking about a play today, which we haven't done in a while.
Yeah, and I think this one is good.
It's definitely like one of the most analyzed and written about plays, like, maybe of all time.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that we are gonna be brave and take a crack at it, because I'm sure people want to know what we think.
That's why they tune in.
That's why they tune in.
Three
What's
sisters.
Our play?
Three
oh,
sisters.
Oh wait, let's do that again.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I'll say what's our play and then you say the play. Ready? What's our play?
It's Three Sisters by Anton Chekhov.
It's the Chekhov play, I feel like. I feel like when people talk about Chekhov, I mean, they talk about, like, his four. Are you reading out of the, like, collection of four plays? Did you have to buy that in school?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, I had to buy a collection of Chekhov's four most famous plays. But I feel like of the four, this is the one, you know?
Yeah, because, like, people know the names, but not their stories. No, but there's, like, obviously, like, the names are going. And there is, hang on, one of these editions is free on Google Books.
Oh, I'm so sure you can find this for free wherever.
It's free if you haven't read it yet.
If you haven't read it yet. I have the Modern Library Classics edition, which was translated by Michael Henry Heim. That was the one that was recommended to me by my teacher when we were studying Chekhov for some reason. I guess it's just a really good translation. So if you're interested in that, Michael Henry Heim, H-E-I-M. but I really love my edition. I think it's a really good, because translations of Russian, I think people always talk about, like, how you need a good translation, which I'm not to say don't use the free version, but if you, you know, you want to get up on your classic Russian literature, maybe go for, like, a good translation.
Yeah, and it'll probably make it way easier to understand.
Yeah, do you know who translated your version by chance?
No, I can't find the, I keep trying to look for it, but I can't find it.
Okay. Well, regardless.
Closed out of it.
Yeah, so what's the story? Who are the sisters? Who's the guy who wrote it? What's it all about?
Well, here we go.
Here we go.
So, one Mr. Anton Chekhov was born on January 29th, 1860, so he was an Aquarius. And he died on July 15th, 1904, at the age of 44, which is tragic. He was born in the Russian Empire and died in the German Empire. Don't remember why I wrote that, but just wanted folks to know.
Well, this play is a little bit anti-German.
Oh.
There's a lot of, at this time, and it's in, like, every, I really like Russian literature. Anyway, it's in, like, every Russian thing you read, there's, like, tension between Russia and Germany. And because I don't know that much about Russian history, but I've read all these books, all I know is that it's a phenomenon that exists. I don't know why.
Well, maybe we can uncover some blue paw prints and do a little Blues Clues thing and get ourselves there.
In Blues Clues, who are we? Are you Steve and I'm Blue? Or am I the salt shaker?
Or salt and pepper.
Or salt and pepper. And our little babies, paprika. What's the other one?
Rosemary.
Oh, they have... See, it doesn't make sense that salt and pepper would produce an entirely different spice, but we won't go there. Back to Three Sisters.
I also just made that up. Well, now I want to know. Hang on.
Okay, we'll do a pause and we'll find out.
There's a little red
paprika
one.
Paprika and cinnamon.
Cinnamon. Aw.
Yeah.
So, back to business. He has four plays, like we said earlier, that most, if not all, theater people know.
Does he have other plays? I don't even know this.
There are a lot of short stories.
Oh, okay. But these are the plays.
Where he started, yeah. Like, and capital
all
P
famous?
Plays. Yeah, The Seagull, Uncle Vanya, The Cherry Orchard, and this one, Three Sisters.
Yep, those are all in my special book.
My special
magic book.
You start like Hocus Pocus 2 with like Chekhov.
Stanislavski and Chekhov come back from the dead. That would actually be cool.
Five theaters apart because they're not gay. Okay. So, his dad was a grocery store owner, and his mother was a traveling storyteller, which I love that.
Yeah, I want to be a traveling storyteller. I guess kind of that's what, like, theater is, but you don't
like stand-up comedy.
I'll go to a bunch of fringe festivals and be like, I'm a traveling storyteller.
Do you think that's irony that, like, they call, in the UK, they call their bangs fringe? So is it, like, the bangs festival?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I think it's fringe meaning like on the edges of something rather than fringe meaning like a series of strings hanging down, you know?
That's no fun.
I wish it was the bangs festival. You would catch me there. Although I don't have bangs anymore. They have actually grown them out. In case anyone was wondering.
I was.
Yeah, you were. And now you know.
I do. Oh, speaking of not fun, it is noted that his father was very abusive. So that could be seen as the form for Chekhov's tales of hypocrisy. And later, as the children started to grow, like him and his siblings, and then start to have their own children, he was very critical of the way his brother treated his own wife and kids and asked him to remember their father. Before I get into what he said, I just want to... Despotism is when one person has supreme power over everything. That there's a quote. He said, let me ask you to recall that it was despotism and lying that ruined your mother's youth. Despotism and lying so mutilated our childhood that it's sickening and frightening to think about it. Remember the horror and disgust we felt in those times when father threw a tantrum at dinner over too much salt in the soup and called mother a fool. Which I think that it does such a... It's calling him out without calling him out. Chekhov has stated that the children got their talent from their father, but their souls from their mother, which I think is a very alt-boy thing to say.
Yeah, he's like, my kids are nothing like me. They're great. Except for that they're talented because of me.
So his family had many, many troubles, more than what I just said. His father was trying to build a bigger house for their expanding family, but a contractor cheated them out of their money. So everyone except Anton fled to Moscow in order to avoid debtor's prison But in Moscow, they still lived very much in poverty.
Wait, so they left behind just one of the kids?
Because he was in school.
Oh, okay.
So they, like, finished that.
How old was he? Do we know? Was he, like, 12? And they were just like, finish school and take care of yourself, kid.
Well, I know he had to take a... Well, actually, I don't know how school works in Russia, the 1860s and 70s. But I know he graduated high school at age 19. So there might have been a year where he had to be like, all right, let's figure this out.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So they left him behind, and so he had to pay for schooling through odd jobs, so I'm sure he was exhausted. And he sent any extra money to his family.
Oh, rubles, that's sweet. If you will. Rubles, if you will.
So after he finished his primary schooling, he was accepted into the medical school at I.M. Sekhanov, First Moscow State Medical University. So he actually made a living practicing medicine, and he moonlighted as a writer. He said that medicine was his lawful wife and literature was his mistress.
Okay, I did not know that he was a literal doctor.
Yeah, he was a physician.
That's so cool. But it also is just like another case in point that even like the most famous and revered playwrights of all time, like often are not just playwrights. Like this guy had to have a day job as a doctor.
Oh, but here's the twist. He still didn't make that much money from being a doctor because he spent so much time giving free medical care to the poor people of the area.
Oh, that's this guy rocks.
Yeah.
He just sounds like a really stand-up, cool, interesting guy.
He wrote some very complex and nearly, people found them hard to understand, short stories, that is.
Okay.
And he was never apologetic for doing so. He said it's the artist's job to ask questions and not answer them. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do agree. Like, the thing about any work of art is that, like, the art is in the person who's watching it, right? The art isn't the person who's seeing it. If someone makes a sculpture and nobody looks at it, then it doesn't mean anything. Like, but the experience that the viewer has with it is what makes it art. So if the playwright answers all the questions, then like there's no need to think about it any further. Whereas, you know, if he does what he does in this play where he's asking all these questions about like, what does life mean? What does it mean to be a person? You leave the theater and you think about yourself. You don't think about, I don't know, whatever he said the solution was.
So do you think that can translate over into like the actual structure of a play? Because you can't just set up all these things and then just not finish it. You know what I mean? Like not
yeah,
close
I think
them out.
So. I think like Chekhov is really a master of this, of like having these little arcs that sort of like move in circles and complete themselves. And but the arc isn't like taking a stance. Like in the case of Three Sisters, it's just like showing you like the breadth of a person's life, and then you are forced to like take from watching that like, oh, what if like did they do something wrong, did they do the right thing, like what were they thinking about, like what do I think of the choices they made, and do I want to make those choices for myself, rather than like, I don't know, he could have said within like the affairs in the story, like, oh, like cheating on your husband is bad. Like he could have had a character say that and then had every character agree. But that would be a different experience, right?
See, if a series finale doesn't wrap everything up, I'm left aching for more for the rest of my life, which I think is also what leads to like shitty reboots. But I mean, I 100% agree with asking questions.
Well, I think, like, do you mean asking questions about, like, what literally happens? Because I think leaving something like that incompleted is different. That's almost like, I don't know, you're making a choice to not complete your story to, like, confuse people deliberately. But I think even in, I don't know, say, like, a TV show, like, wraps every storyline up, it may not make, like, a moral stance or like a philosophical stance. It may leave you to ask those questions.
Oh, so it's technical versus figurative?
Yeah, I think so.
Nice.
Nice.
So the stories started to receive attention, and a celebrated Russian writer by the name of Dmitry Grigorovich told him that he was very talented and had the ability to be put front and center with the new and upcoming writers, However, he told him to slow down, write less, and concentrate on quality. Which I'm pretty sure he done did.
I'm pretty sure he done did that, yeah. He said, I'm going to write 4 plays, and everybody will talk about them for the rest of life on Earth.
Literally. So he kind of developed a style of theater that came to be known as Chekhov's gun.
Which is a reference to The Seagull. Spoiler alert for a play that was written a really long time ago. But at the end of The Seagull, one of the main characters kills himself with a gun unexpectedly. Were you going to say that? Sorry.
No. No, just kind of explaining what Chekhov's gun is.
Okay, go ahead.
He said, quote, remove everything that has no relevance to the story. If you say in the first chapter that there is a rifle hanging on the wall, in the second or third chapter, it absolutely must go off. If it is not going to be fired, it shouldn't be hanging there.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think people study how Chekhov writes plays because he's so good at planting something, and then we watch that thing that was maybe just one line in Act One develop into like a whole story in the following acts. It's remarkable. It really is.
I feel like, you know that meme from It's Always Sunny where he has his like giant eyes and his hand to his forehead and there's a whole board behind him with red strings?
Yeah, that's
Chekhov. I feel like that's him.
It almost seems like, I would almost guess that he doesn't finish, like he doesn't write chronologically because things are so, like, I don't know. I guess he's just a really good editor because everything ties together like so perfectly. And we talk about this with every play that we read, but like every line contributes to the advancement of the plot, and that's what a really good play does. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
So he moved to a smaller town with his brother, where he continued his free medical work. He said he really appreciated this time because he got to interact with many factions of Russian society, and it opened up his eyes to a whole new world. So he just keeps on going, huh?
Keeps giving free medical care to poor people.
We'll talk about the karma that comes with with all this. So The Seagull, which we mentioned earlier, debuted in 1896 at the Alexandrinsky Theater, and it wasn't well received at all. The audience actually booed.
Wow, that actually doesn't really surprise me. The Seagull is a weird play. It's like, I remember reading once, if you read it, it's like horribly depressing, and at the end, this guy who you follow the whole time kills himself. But then, like, it was supposed to be a comedy, but it's like Three Sisters is pretty funny. And I don't know. I don't find The Seagull funny. And I just think it's a weird play. So sorry, Chekhov. I don't like that one. I know that matters. I was in, I took a Stanislavski acting class and I had to do a scene from The Seagull and I just fucking hate it. I had to be Nina because of course I did. And I hated it.
Who was the Pinta and who was the Santa Maria?
Well, I just did it once.
No, I mean, that was a pilgrim joke. I'm sorry. That's okay. I'll put in like an audience clapping. He said he was going to quit theater after the reception of The Seagull. That was until the theater director asked his friend by the name of Konstantin Stanislavski.
We know him.
Yeah. Hey, bud.
Hey, bud.
He was to direct it at the Moscow Art Theater. And from then on, it was well received, which sparked him to write new plays. And they're kind of a staple in the theatrical canon.
Yeah, just a little bit. It really is encouraging that Chekhov almost quit theater, because I almost quit theater every single day. Almost every day, I'm like, I'm never going to do it again. So that's nice.
Getting back to his personal life, in 1901, he married an actress named Olga Pataki. Just kidding, that was a joke for the Hey Arnold fans. Her name was Olga Chekhova, which I love that she had to feminize her last name.
Yeah, that's how Russian works. It's really interesting. They also, like, and see them in this play, they have these things called patronymics, which is your father's name, but either feminized or like masculinized, and then they add Ovich or like Ovika or Ov. Like, if your dad's name is Ivan and your name is also Ivan, you'd be like Ivan Ivanovich, and then you'd have your last name as well. And it's like a like a term of endearment and familiarity to call someone by their first name and their patronymic.
Maybe they're onto something.
Maybe they're onto something. I think it's cute. Russian, yeah, Russian names are fun.
Oh, well, not fun. Shortly after, he was diagnosed with terminal tuberculosis and soon thereafter passed.
Aww.
His wife, Olga, recounted his final moments where he got pain medicine, chugged a glass of champagne, and then died. So, like, that's, he got a really cool way out. That's his karma.
Oh my god. I can't imagine chugging champagne. It is so carbonated. I would throw up.
Well, I mean, he did have a lung thing, so maybe he had such a heavy burp that it just took out his lungs on the way out.
Oh, Chekhov. He's dead.
Oh my god, I still have more to talk about. Let's get into the play. So, Three Sisters, it was written in 1900, and it also premiered at the Moscow Art Theater in 1901, and Stanislavski directed that too. There isn't too much on the history and, like, the details of it, but here's the hot goss. Chekhov and Stanislavski did not agree on how to put on the show. Chekhov called Stanislavski's direction exuberant and said that it took away from the subtleties that he had intended. Stanislavski wanted to showcase all the inner workings of the characters and their dreams and goals and things like that. But audiences thought that Stanislavski's direction didn't really match the way that the sisters deal with and experience life. It was still super popular and the company kept it going.
That would be really tough to be a playwright and not agree with your director about it. I haven't experienced that. I think it would be really disappointing.
Because haven't you directed all of them?
Well, I directed my first two plays, and then my good friend and collaborator directed my third one. And him and I are just like...
Oh, right.
We're very in sync, so we agreed about everything pretty much. But I think it would be really hard to not agree with... If him and I didn't agree on something, that would have been really hard.
Mm-hmm. Especially because you guys fight all the time.
We fight all the time, but not about theater, really. I mean, we did fight, but it was always like in service to the play, which I think is the ideal. If we had genuinely had different ideas about how to do it, that would have been really hard to get past.
Mm-hmm. So there are some famous performances of the show. In 2009, there was a production in Poland that was adapted by Tracy Letts, who did August Osage County.
He also did Killer Joe.
Oh, that's where it... Right.
Yeah, he did Killer Joe, which is a play that turned into a movie with Matthew McConaughey. But the play version, Jay and I saw in London in 2018, and Orlando Bloom was in it, and we saw his butt.
Orlando butt.
Orlando but like, butt. He had one of the nicest butts I've ever seen.
Yeah, I could tell they were made of steel from the literal back row where we were.
Yeah, it's like that guy does squats like 400 times a day every day. Beautiful ass. Congratulations, Katie.
Their daughter's name is Daisy Rose Bloom. How nuts is that?
I kind of hate that. Daisy Bloom. Northwest.
Okay, your turn.
My turn. Okay, so I really struggled to write a synopsis for this play because it's a four-act play. And I actually was reading this playwriting book and about playwriting, and it uses Chekhov as like the example of someone who always uses the four-act play. It's kind of like a style that was unique to him. And the issue with like trying to synopsis it is most of the major action happens between acts, and you have to fill in the gaps as an audience member. So it's a four-act play, and in each act there's a continuation of this long story. So, at the beginning of the play, the Prozorov family, which consists of Andrei, the oldest brother, Olga, the oldest sister, Masha, and Irina. So, they're this family that used to live in Moscow, but then they moved to this other town. We don't know. I don't think they say where. In Russia, with their father, who worked in the military. So, he was stationed in this town. And then their father dies, and they're all adults. And they're left with this house in this town, and they still live there. But the three sisters, blah, 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 that's the name of the play, it's actually just Irina and Olga because Masha, the middle sister, is actually married to a guy from the town. But they desperately want to return to Moscow, and they talk about it all the time. But they can't do this without basically the help of their brother, Andrei, because I don't think they can move if they don't like live with the man. I think that's what the situation is. So they can't do that without Andre. Also, they live in this town, and the military that their father was part of is still stationed there. So a lot of the soldiers are, like, really close associates of the Prozorov family. So basically, we watch this family in this town who longs to be somewhere else. We watch them grow over the course of about 5 years. Each act takes place a couple years apart. And a lot of stuff happens. So it's like sort of that thing that we were talking about before, where, like, Chekhov will plant something in one act, and then it will come to fruition later. And basically, that's what happens to all these characters. So in Act 1, we have a series of small inciting incidents that grow into large problems. So for Masha, the middle sister, she got married when she was 18 to this teacher. What's his name? Kabab. Khans Kabsanab.
Bob?
Bop-boo-bop. His name is Kaligan. Kaligin? I don't know how to say it. I'm not good with Russian.
Oh.
That's her husband. So Masha is unhappy with her marriage, and her inciting incident in the first act, she meets this guy, Vershinin, who's a soldier, who's married, who has kids, and she meets and she's interested in him, and then throughout the course of the play, they develop this affair. Irina, the youngest sister, she, in the first act, expresses the desire to, like, work. She really wants to, like, work because she's just been laying around being, like, rich her whole life, I guess. But they're not that rich, but, like, they're rich enough that, like, if she wanted to just stay home, she probably could. So they're kind of rich. But she wants to work, and then throughout the play, she gets this job, and this job, like, just wears her down until she's absolutely exhausted. Olga, the oldest sister, her arc is not as clear, but basically she works for the school, and she doesn't really like her job. And sort of, like, against her will, she climbs the ranks until she's the headmistress at the school. But, like, she never wanted the job. Like, she's not happy with it. So, basically, it's a series of people looking towards the future for something. And it either turns out really well for them. Usually, it turns out just completely different than they expected. Anyway, so the play ends. And these people have, you know, experienced all their things. And they never get to Moscow. Irina, who really wanted to go to Moscow, eventually marries this guy just because she feels like it's the right thing to do. And then he gets murdered. And he was, like, her hope of maybe getting away and starting a new life. Olga's stuck as a headmistress. Masha's affair is ended because the soldiers eventually leave town. And basically this town that was vibrant and, like, filled with this community of people just, like, resets itself until everybody's in a different place, but, like, none of them are together and none of them are happy. It's not the cheeriest thing in the world. What do you think?
Well, I think it's okay that it's not cheery.
It's like, I mean, it's not totally depressing. There's moments of hope. And basically, the message of the play is your life will not go exactly the way you plan it, but you have to keep going. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's... I feel like Natasha kind of was trying to break that, I guess.
Yeah, Natasha's a really interesting antagonist because it's all about, like... Her story is all about power, and, like, we haven't talked about Natasha at all, have we? Okay, so Andre, the oldest brother, he's the hope for the sisters to move to Moscow, right? But then at the end of Act 1, he proposes to this girl, Natasha, who lives in the town. So it's like, okay, I guess Andre's not leaving, he's settling down with Natasha. And Natasha starts off as this, like, really timid, embarrassed... She's sort of like, they say she's not stylish, like, she wears, like, the wrong color sash with her dress... So she's very, like, nervous, and then gradually over the course of the play, she just, like, manipulates everyone and, like, grows the most powerful until she kicks everybody out of the house.
When they talked, when it was, like, the two sisters were sharing in the room, I was like, oh my god, I could never do that.
Yeah, she literally, and they were talking about this in my playwriting book, and it was so interesting. What Chekhov does is he literally, like, limits the space that is available to Irina and Olga. Like, he narrows their world, or Natasha does. So it starts out and they're in their big house and they're enjoying it. And then the next scene is in this tiny bedroom. And then the next scene, they're out of the house completely. They don't even live there anymore. They're all in the garden. So it's like Natasha, like, narrows their space, creeps in on their life, and then kicks them out. And it's all showed visually by the set, which is so cool.
For what it is, that's kind of badass.
Kind of badass. Natasha's a girl boss, I'll say it.
Whenever I picture her, I picture she's in the Twilight movies and wait a minute. Nope, she's not. I just think of Natasha. I couldn't think of her last name. It was Natasha Lyonne.
Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing.
I always picture, there was a girl in my acting class who played Natasha really, really well, and I always picture her whenever I read it, which is a testament to a really good performance, I think.
Yeah, that was, yeah, there's some, like, socioeconomic thing going on that we have to, like, be around for.
What?
Like, the socio, like, the, how the Russia, because it was, like, pre-Russian Revolution.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's, I think, just a lot of, again, I don't know that much about pre-Revolution Russia, but I've read a lot of books that take place then, and it was just a time of a lot of, like, tension, I feel like. Like, sort of people coming around to the idea that just people shouldn't just be, like, rich and sit around. People were like, oh, that's actually wrong, which rocks that they that they did that.
Right.
But there's also, yeah, there's a lot of this, I feel like. It was people just being like, life doesn't make sense. Life is meaningless. And, you know, when the collective population feels that way, like, of course they're going to rebel. And of course they're going to change things because they're feeling, you know, stifled. Wow, I just explained the Russian Revolution.
You did.
Oh, I'm a genius. Move out
of my history teachers. I feel like there was also a sense of gentrification, especially with Vershinin, because he was like, the girls are too good and too smart and powerful for this town or whatever. And he's like saying that like their kind is going to take over.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's gentrification in like the typical way that we think about it now, but I think, but like, yeah, there is like this idea that like humans will progress and there's like a superior person and we can all rely on the superior person to make the future better for us. And it's sort of this like, all of the men in this play, like, are fucking obsessed with these girls. And they're like, oh, you know, they're the future and they're going to fix everything for us. Meanwhile, the girls are like, we're literally miserable. So it's like, yeah, they're trying to, it's like, yeah, does that make any sense?
Yes.
I think I got confused with gentrification, but I know what you mean. It's that, like, one kind is taking over.
Mm-hmm.
But they're scared of that. And maybe that's why they start the revolution.
Let me call my BFF Lenin. Hey,
hey, what's up? What else do we have to say about this play?
I had something I wanted to bring up for discussion, I guess, yes. Which is exactly what we've been doing. So everyone, you know, was lusting for Moscow and kept talking about it. But, like, that's where Chekhov's in-real-life family was, and they were struggling there.
Yeah, well, is it really... Because, like... Is it about Moscow or is it about wanting something different? So it could be that like Chekhov knows very well that like Moscow is not a perfect place mm-hmm. and everything's not better in Moscow, but he makes these, I'm changing up how I pronounce the city's name every time.
I know.
Is it Moscow or Moscow? I don't know.
I think it's Moscow because in Carrie's version, they said Moscow. Wait. Yeah. They said Moscow was like a joke. So I think it's Moscow.
Moscow. Okay.
Moscow. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I feel like it's like Moscow isn't actually a million times better, but these people still wish for it. So maybe that's like what he's doing with that.
Yeah, like.
Or also, maybe he just has affection for it because even if you're struggling somewhere, you might still love it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone always shits on St. Petersburg in Russian literature. They're always like, St. Petersburg is so cold. They're like, the cold Petersburg wind ruining my life. I would love to go though.
Oh, I saw that Solione means salty in Russian.
That's funny. Solione is the worst fucking character. Solione and Natasha. Oh, my God.
Wait. No, when Chekhov was critical of his brother's parenting style, and he was like, remember how Dad acted? Remember when he threw a fit about the soup being too salty?
Oh, so he's like, this guy's a dick. And salt equals dick.
Salt equals dick.
That's interesting. Something that's really interesting about Solione is he's the only person who, like, says what they're going to do and then actually does it. But the thing that he does is just terrible. Like, he kills someone. He's like, I will kill this guy. And because nobody's actually doing the thing that they said they would do, they're like, he's not going to kill this guy. But then he does. He sets up these beautiful little contradictions where it'll be like one person will do something and it won't be at all what they expected. Like, they'll want to do something and then it'll be horrible. But then someone else will have something they dread happen to them, and it'll be the best thing ever. Because life is like that.
That is true.
What else do you have to say about this play? Anything?
Well, that was all my notes. I mean, we don't... I said all predicting the Russian Revolution, but I don't know if we
could. I don't know if it's like predicting as much as showing that there are things wrong in this society, you know, and that people are upset, which is, yeah, predicting. So, yes.
Cool. Yeah.
Cool.
Because yeah. I think it happened like 14 years later.
Yeah, it's pretty soon.
So, and then that turned into communism.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting because in the play they say, like, they're like, oh, in 25 years, everything will be different. And they were right. And they didn't know because they're not real. But yeah, it's really fascinating because it's fascinating, this play, about like its reflection on like the human experience as a whole and suffering as a whole. But it's also very specific to Russia, which is, it's really fascinating. And I think that's why it endures, because it's a historic play, but it's also an enduring and sort of always relevant play.
Yeah. And because people, well, again, I don't know the social parts of late 1800s Russia, but people don't really sit, like, this forces you to sit down and think about other people and how it, how you can also affect it and how it can also affect you. So it's very humanizing.
Yeah, it's a really remarkable play. It is. And I know I say that every fucking time, but we keep picking these plays, except for David Mamet, that are just like, that are just the best of the best. And I think there's a reason we continue to like look to Chekhov for answers, and we just keep doing his shit over and over again, and we should.
And check this one off our bucket list.
Yeah, we did Chekhov. Good for us. Sorry, I like went off note because my notes did not make any sense.
I don't know. I followed it, but then again, I'm high.
And again, I'm high. Okay, well, do we wanna crack this butt? This case closed.
Crack this butt.
Is that crack this just... butt.
Not crack this butt, but yeah, case closed.
Case we can... closed. On three
sisters, no more.
There are no sisters.
Not anymore.
The sisters, there's three of them. They want to go. They don't. That's the end.
And then it's a classic.
It's a classic. Okay, well, thank you, Anton Chekhov, for writing all these plays that we like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a real one.
You're a real one. Okay, should I do the ending stuff?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Thank you for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Highbrow Theater if you want to keep up with us. If you like the show, you can subscribe to it on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, a good review would do.
Leave us a review. You. Why not? What? Why not?
Yeah.
You didn't do Stefan this episode.
We can audience test it to see if it's missed.
Okay.
But I don't know. I thought it was getting done.
Okay.
But we can test the waters.
It's your call. Anyway, go ahead.
If you like what you hear, give us everything in your wallet. I'm just kidding. I don't know. It's a fun thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but if you wanted to toss us a dollar so I could buy myself a pack of gum, you know.
Which we all money would be going to furthering this, and by that I mean keeping us happy with stuff that we want.
That's exactly right. I couldn't have said it better.
Okay, I think we'll high five.
High five, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
Nah, yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
Okay.
Okay, goodbye.
Okay, really, bye.